It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Time for the Fastest 15. We'll start with a bit of nostalgia. 105 years ago on this day, Smith Tower opened up to the public. It was then the tallest building in Seattle and, what, tallest west of the Mississippi, I think.
Yep, tallest west of the Mississippi.
And so great claim to fame for Seattle. For those of you who are new here and don't recognize it, it's perhaps one of the smallest of the of what might... You would look at it and not even consider it a skyscraper. You'd look at it as kind of a quaint, old-fashioned little building on the south end of town, just kind of east of the stadiums and south of all the major skyscrapers. And but you look at it, and it's still a beautiful... it's a beautiful tower. It's got some elegant charm to it. You can go inside. You can have parties, weddings, things like that. They rent it out. You've done that before, haven't you, Jenny?
Yeah, I actually had my last birthday party at the top of the Smith Tower. They have kind of a 1920s-themed restaurant bar, kind of a speakeasy feel. And so I dressed up kind of like a flapper, and we had a great view of downtown Seattle with the Christmas lights at the time. And it's just beautiful. It's and you get kind of you get a free entrance to the museum if you pay for your ticket to go up the elevator.
Yeah, it's like $20, which, I mean, yeah. You know, it's a beautiful tower. I've done that once, I think. But anyway, at the time, you know, it was quite a triumph of engineering and accomplishment, and it's a little piece of historical Seattle that that has aged pretty well. A total of 1,400 doors, 2,000 windows, 40,000 feet of molding went into the construction. It took 3 years to build, and it was erected atop a foundation of 1,276 concrete piles, each 22 feet long. So there you have it. It's no small feat. One part of historic Seattle, and it's also celebrating its birthday today. Also, in the city of Ellensburg, the population is booming, as it is in other parts of the state, including big headline in the Everett Herald today, the Snohomish County population increasing every day as well. But in Ellensburg, there's something unique going on as well. Not just the increase in the population, but also the decrease in crime. City of Ellensburg is seeing fewer criminals in some of the key areas. Murder, stolen cars, destruction of property, assault, all of them dropping by at least 19% from 2017 to 2018. Now, what could be the reason? What's been happening in Ellensburg that might signify or might explain some of the drop in crime? Well, according to the city, they think it's because in 2008, they passed a tax that allowed local law enforcement to increase staff by 20%. And crime has decreased by 20%. They hired six more police officers. And here's the kicker. They focused a lot of that on drug activity. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is another thing that I've been thinking of lately as I look around and see the public spaces in Seattle just overwhelmed by people that have collapsed within themselves into drug encampments, and you look at it and you think, you know, there might have been something to the whole let's crack down on drug dealers in a big way, because there's a lot of people whose lives are being destroyed, and every time you look at somebody who's living in a tent or a tarp out there, and we have some kind of police sweep, and, you know, people end up finding weapons and more drugs that are being sold and other things, you know, you can also think of the number of families that have been impacted, because it's somebody's daughter, somebody's mom, it's somebody's dad or, you know, son or grandfather out there. And, you know, they didn't want that for their relative, but they've burned every bridge and they've surrendered to the addictions of substances, substance abuse. And so, you know, look, cracking down on that early in Ellensburg, they're finding it's working. Maybe this would be a good approach on the west side of the mountains as well. So good for Ellensburg for cracking down, and good for Ellensburg for cutting back on their crime. And another piece of good news for the Fastest 15, 500 immigrants became citizens in the annual Seattle ceremony at the Seattle Center. 500 from around the world became citizens on July 4th, the nation's birthday, also signifying their day to become citizens. I had a friend from Denmark who was trying to become a citizen for years, and that was his dream. he and his family is to be able to be citizens at a ceremony like this. They finally had to give it up after, I want to say it was 11 years, might have been 10. They just said, you know, we've been trying for so long. I've got to get this. He's working on a business. His children were Americans because they were born here while they were waiting. They just could not get the legal process to go through.
Really?
Yeah. It was just one thing after another, one delay after another. And, of course, they're spending thousands of dollars on legal fees as they wait. And so they finally just decided, look, we've got dual citizenship. We'll just move to continental Europe and do our business there. So the business they had here that was hiring people is now located in Italy, of all places.
So they had to go back to Europe.
Had to go back to Europe.
My grandma actually went through the citizenship process in the 1960s. Mm. She immigrated from Germany in 1956 and you know, waited the 5 years, took the classes, passed the test with flying colors. So yeah. I've always been very proud of, you know, the people who go through that process, that you have to really want to be an American citizen because it's a lot of work.
Yeah, you do. I mean, and there's a lot of red tape, a lot of tests to take. And let's face it, there's plenty of Americans who could not pass the citizenship test.
Oh, yeah, probably most.
In fact, I'm betting there's plenty of elected officials in the United States that couldn't pass the citizenship test based on some of the comments I've heard over time. However, real quickly, Daniela Gonzalez said she was very excited. She said she's from Mexico. She applied for papers and stuff when her daughter was in the seventh grade. Her daughter is graduating from high school this next year, and now she's finally the citizen. So it might take a while, but she got a little bit of advantage from that.
We've got clips from her.
Oh, yeah. She did manage to get some help from her daughter.
It has been a long road, and, you know, thank God for everything. You know, we're here, and we're able to have opportunities that other people don't have.
Yeah, it's great. And she's just excited about being in this country, excited to be a part of it.
It's a very emotional moment. It's very exciting. God bless America.
I always love that. There's something unique and wonderful about, because other countries, people might be able to come and stay legally. You know, one of the great challenges in France right now is that they have a large immigrant population, but in general, the country hasn't welcomed them as French. They might be here legally, but they're still considered other. Whereas in the United States, we have citizenship rules. When somebody becomes a citizen, they're the same as everybody else, and we have much less of that. Do we have some challenges? Sure. But, you know, again, you look at everywhere else, there's a reason why so many people do so many things to try and get here, both legally and illegally. And one of the reasons is it's a much better place to be. And that we should be encouraged by and be thankful for. Next story, an L.A. earthquake shook people big time.
This is rocking, like swaying.
Still warm.
You can hear everything creaking.
It was a 6.4 in magnitude trembler, and people felt it. It's the largest earthquake in the area for the last, what? I want to say it's been years anyway. Close
20
to,
years, yeah. He said.
So, I mean, what's weird about that is not only did they have the big L.A. earthquake, and here's a guy in a computer repair shop.
So we opened up as usual, and then around 10:30, everything started to shake. Went to the doorway, and we lost almost all of our product off of our shelves. It collapsed in. We had all of our shelving pretty much just collapse, and it was like a hurricane hitting.
Yeah, but my understanding is there's also been a significant earthquake in the British Columbia area, so it's just all along that.
Yeah, I saw that on
ridge
Twitter.
Here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, not a 6.4. I think it was a 5-something, but still a significant-sized earthquake, and I still remember the big one we had here in Seattle. What was that now? I want to say 10 years, but it might even be longer.
2001. It was the spring that I was in the second grade.
Wow.
I distinctly remember getting under our desks.
I'm getting old here. I just remember telling people that they seemed, you know, I mean, I'm looking around. The desks that we had were not shaped to withstand any weight. So there's no way I was getting under that because, you know, they're ones that are coming out of the wall and they're just there to hold papers. But they're not angled in such a way, they're not supported in such a way as they're going to hold any weight. I have read since then that if you have large stacks of paper, you know, people will hold paper will hold a heck of a lot of weight because it's already collapsed. And so it's already condensed, you know, it'd be hard to crush it more. So, but anyway, I remember people kind of moving out toward the windows to watch and how loud it was. That's what I remember the most, isn't the movement, but how loud and louder that it got, to the point where you're wondering, you know, how loud does it get before things start to fall apart and collapse? It made me very, very nervous to be there. Now, I know in the California, they get earthquakes, little tremblers all the time, but even they have to fear the big one. And don't forget, we're also along a major fault line here in Seattle. Luckily, it hasn't happened yet, but we're, as the geologists put it, we're overdue, which is always makes me a little bit nervous and makes me a little more nervous having read about elementary schools in Washington State not being prepared for an earthquake. Many Washington State schools are not prepared. There's a story at MyNorthwest.com. We have thousands of school buildings, many of them unprepared for the earthquake. Geologists and other researchers did a study of a sample size of 222 schools in Washington State. They found that many of our buildings are not prepared for a major earthquake. They delivered the study to the legislature. Now, there's 4,444 school buildings in the state. So, you know, the sample size is still significant, 222, but state officials estimate that a magnitude 9 earthquake and tsunami could kill about 7,600 students. 7,600 students. And I don't know what that would look like, because magnitude 9 is one heck of a large earthquake. I don't know how many other people would be dying in that area if that were to occur. But I do know that there's plenty of parts of the state that they put under the "it would liquefy" category. Are you familiar with that?
The liquefaction.
Yeah, where basically the ground kind of becomes a liquid. And I've always wondered I don't wonder enough so that I want to see it myself in person, but I do wonder what that means. Like, does that mean your building's going to sink? You know, if it's liquid, does that mean everything would sink in and you're going to end up like, you know, Lois Lane in the first Superman, kind of buried alive there? Or how does that work?
I've always kind of pictured a quicksand effect.
Me too.
Yeah, kind of on these kind of big fake pieces of land, you know, that shouldn't be there.
Right. And then you wonder, where do you go? I mean, if you're in a in a place where it's going to liquefy, where's the safest place to be? And I would think it would be on top of something tall, because it's just going to sink.
Probably not there at all.
Yeah, or, you know, something really big and flat, so that if it's in there, it's not going to sink too fast, because I want to be able to, you know, keep my breath going. But scary stuff. According to the Department of Natural Resources, about 200 schools are within a mile of a known active fault. That's 72% of schools are within a high seismic hazard zone. 314 schools are in zones that are at a high risk of liquefaction during an earthquake. And they're hoping that this study is used to help retrofit and upgrade the buildings to better protect against earthquake damage. It's part of the shocking thing here is that they say the cost could range for the schools from $63,000 to more than $5 million. The average cost is $1.7 million. But the increase in funding for schools has been huge over the course of the last 7 years or so. You know, I mean, big time. And it just, it's so strange to me. You read about something like this and you think, you know, isn't this one of those, wouldn't this be one of the priority issues when you've got a huge growth in terms of money available and you've got some backlog? Wouldn't this be one of the backlogs? Well, let's look at the backlog list. You know, we got some park trails. That's important. We got retrofitting elementary schools for safety in an earthquake. And keep in mind, it's not just the kids to save, although that would seem to raise to priority number one, but also schools and community buildings like that are also where people go afterward if there's a major disaster for relief and shelter. So, you know, there's multiple reasons why you would want to retrofit those buildings and make them so that they would still be standing and structurally sound after a major earthquake. And, you know, no small part of that is because the number of people that are going to need shelter, not to mention the safety of the kids who may actually be in the building at the time of a given disaster. You can check out the story at MyNorthwest.com. And that, of course, brings us to one more in the Fastest 15, and that is the soccer star, Rapinoe. Megan Rapinoe is back in the news again. Remember, she's the one who said she's not going to the White House.
I'm excited about going to the White House.
I'm not going to the White House. No. I'm not going to the White House. That's, okay. We're not going to be invited.
You're not going to be invited?
I doubt it.
And then, of course, Trump said they're invited whether they win or lose. She responded to Trump at a press conference.
I stand by the comments that I made about not wanting to go to the White House, with the exception of the expletive. My mom will be very upset about that. But I think obviously entering with a lot of passion, considering how much, you know, time and effort and pride we take in the platform that we have and using it for good and for leaving the game in a better place and hopefully the world in a better place. I don't think that I would want to go, and I would encourage my teammates to think hard about lending that platform or having that co-opted by an administration that doesn't feel the same way and doesn't fight for the same things that we fight for.
No, it's kind of embarrassing because what happens here is they start thinking that that, you know, there are things that you're not gonna agree with and you might radically disagree with, but there's plenty of things that the administration, by virtue of it being an American administration, whether you can't stand them or not, are fighting for. That if you love the country and love what it stands for, there's still plenty of things to find agreement on. So it's not necessarily a co-opting thing as much as it is a. This is what White Houses have done for a long time, recognizing great American athletes, kind of celebrating, you know, great American achievements. So while I disagree with her overall attendance here, and I would have felt the same way, I think, under President Obama or President Bush or even President Clinton at some points, I think, you know, at some point I just look at the story and I think, is this not one of the biggest non-stories to hit the news and have the news be so obsessed with? I feel like this story has been going on for a month, maybe longer. And I really don't know. Maybe it's been 2 days, but in my mind, it's been at least a month. And I can't find a channel or a website not obsessed with it. I had no idea who Rapinoe was before, but if I was her agent, I'd be saying, this is exactly what I wanted you to do. Now we're going to get some endorsement deals. It's going to be good stuff because now people know your name and know who you are, know your image. And at least there's a part of the country that's, you know, super Trump angry that is going to like it. It's like the, you know, Nike right now with Colin Kaepernick. They could sign on and make a soccer line here and she'd be in like Flynn, no problem. But on the conservative side of things, I know a lot of people want to be really upset. They're super angry at her. There's all kinds of memes. And I think, is it worth it? I mean, so she doesn't want to go. So what? Were you paying attention beforehand? And if you weren't paying attention beforehand and didn't know who she was beforehand, why are you so upset about it and talking about it on social media? And why is my Facebook account have so many of these news postings and your news feed as though somehow what she does and what she says is influencing you? You know, anyway, I liked her little nod to her mom there on the profanity mark.
That was cute.
Yeah, these comments aren't new from her. The new part is that she says she's proud to be an American. She told some folks in France she wouldn't visit the White House, but she says, I think I'm particularly, uniquely, and very deeply American. If we want to talk about the ideals that we stand for, the song and the anthem, and what we were focused on, I think I'm extremely American. So again, I would just encourage her, yeah, you are an American. There are plenty of things you can not like the occupant of the White House, but there's still the office. The office goes beyond any individual that holds it. That's one of the great fundamental things about America. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Gosh, it feels like the Independence Day news is just chock full of crime. Crime, crime, and more crime. People getting shot, people trying to stab people and then getting shot. You know, people doing drugs in Chicago. There was kind of a stampede of people at a fireworks show after people thought fireworks were people getting shot, you know, which wouldn't actually be a surprise in Chicago, given the number of people that get shot there every weekend. But in this case, it was just fireworks. So it feels like there's been a lot of crimes. One of them is kind of it's in the Julia Roberts category of crime. It's a crime that you don't read about every day. Dozens of gowns have been stolen, apparently, from Brides and Beyond and Profit Tailoring on 40th Avenue in Linwood. And they're trying to figure out how many are missing.
We don't know how much is missing, you know. You can see the place is upside down, you know. It's like all together, and we don't know. I mean, really, we don't know how many dresses is gone.
And that's from the Q13 story. Imagine, you know, how stressful weddings are. We've got a couple in the family now. They create all kinds of stress. People get really upset. And then being with the bride to realize, yeah, the place with your dress just got burglarized. Apparently, your dress might be among those missing. Bad times. Bad times. Many a groom and many a bride are going to be upset. I say grooms because, let's face it, stress kind of rolls downhill and you're downhill. So it's not going to be a pleasant time for anybody.
How many weddings do you have coming up in your family?
Let's see. I think there's one coming up this weekend for the family, and then another one with family friends.
Okay.
So it's a two-for weekend.
Are they all going off without a hitch so far? Have there been any crises?
There's always a crisis. Every wedding there's a crisis.
Are there any bridezillas?
Well, I think an easier way is, no. This is how all men should respond to that question.
Right.
Absolutely not. You know, everything is just perfectly under control and it's all fine.
Right.
But, I mean, I will say I've been to plenty of weddings where people, you know, something happens and, you know, everybody's in a panic mode. The bride, the bridesmaids, they think nobody, this has never happened before. It's because, you know, let's face it, most of the time, if the wedding's big, it's because it's your first and hopefully your only wedding. You're making it a really big deal. But, you know, the reality is if you're around the older folks, they've basically seen all these things go wrong before. I mean, I had a friend that canceled a wedding for a friend of hers with hours to go.
Oh, man.
You know, and she stood outside the church and just let people know, look, wedding's off, but because the food is not returnable, there's a reception going on right there. We hope you'll stay for lunch.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. That was super awkward, super strange. I don't know if they had the groom's side and the bride's side. You know, food might have been a good idea there, you know, but anyway, it was just one of those things where the bride at one point found out that she had been lied to about some things. It wasn't, you know, sexual in nature. It was just, you know, there was some dishonesty about personal finances. And she thought, you know, it really bothers me. And, you know, basically her friend said, look, if it bothers you now and he's being dishonest now, it's a, you know, and it was a significant difference. It's like, well, maybe it's best to, you know, put the brakes on this.
So did the personal finances lie mean that she was on the hook for covering the cost of the failed wedding?
No, he was on the hook for, well, actually, I think she was on the hook for part of that.
Oh, man.
But, you know, look, the parents are like, they'd rather have you be sure, you know, than not. So,
they're divorced.
You know, it seems like, or it could have seemed like, oh gosh, you know, and this was some of the questions going on in her brain was, you know, if I cancel it, think of all this, the money and the expense and the challenges people have had. And some people have flown in, you know, and then the answer was basically, it's your life. It's the rest of your life. It's the possibility of children. So, you know, what's important isn't, you know, there's going to be a few thousand lost here, you know, it's going to be weird, but better to figure things out now and have one awkward moment than, you know, a lifetime full later or a bigger problem later.
That's so. Why you've got to keep them small. Or in two of my friends' case, I became an ordained minister. So be careful. I might marry you two in there.
So that's good to know.
Yeah.
What do you charge?
I've got to, you know, I would like to talk about that off air, Jennings. I'd not like to broadcast
don't want to give you free advertising.
It depends on how. Well, now that he found out you had a birthday at the Smith Tower, he knows your family has money. So
exactly.
Tag there has gone way up.
It wasn't. No. It was just a few of us going up the Smith Tower.
Yeah.
We didn't rent the whole place.
$5,000.
No. Nope. It was number 26. It wasn't a big birthday.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It was five of us or six.
Sure. $1,000 a head. So $5,000. Yeah. No, I married my two friends in a hotel room. It was just me, them, and their folks and their two kids. It was really great.
Cool.
And like everyone is, I mean, they've been together for a decade or more now, but they finally officially tied the knot. Keep it small. Make sure you know your partner.
I agree.
I am troubled, and this gets us beyond the crime part here, but I am troubled by people who feel compelled to go into all kinds of debt and challenges. And, you know, I'm reading about the average wedding of $30,000, $35,000, and I just think, first of all, nobody can afford that. That's just crazy. If you're super rich, hey, by all means, that's great. But most people cannot afford to lay down that kind of cash, and, you know, you've got a lot of young people struggling to get a home. $35,000 gets you a long ways toward a home payment, even in this area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, so come on.
Is it still tradition to have, is it the groom's father or the bride's father to pay?
Bride's father, traditionally, but
pays for the whole wedding, right?
I think now the tradition is
that's the tradition.
The couples pay for themselves. That's what I plan to do.
I love that tradition.
Yeah.
Now that I have kids, I think that's a let's get that thing going.
I would be dissuading my daughter to not get married. Don't get married.
Not yet.
I don't have the money yet.
I need another year.
Yeah.
Come on.
My boyfriend just messaged me that he heard what I said on air, that we're on the hook for paying. So
nice.
There you go.
Yeah, he probably likes that. So dozens of these gowns are stolen from the Linwood Bridal Shop, as are the contacts, which leads me to think there's all kinds of, you know, you look at this and you think, why would somebody steal that? And then I thought, well, why would they? What if it was somebody who was like, I don't want to get married now. I'm nervous. I need an excuse. Or, you know, somebody who just wanted to throw a monkey wrench into a wedding, like they're going after a single wedding. Wouldn't that make it more interesting?
Right. You know, someone had a vengeance against this one particular couple.
Or like last time, I think when Nicole was here, I was talking about how every once in a while I think of a movie and I think of how it would be different if, like, last time was Mel Gibson and Ransom, you know, and I was talking about, you know, I forget what the difference in the movie was, but in this case, it would be like the wedding dress, you know. They stole the contact information, too, so it's possible they're just going to, you know, call people up and say, look, what's getting this wedding dress back worth to you?
And then you've got Mel Gibson, give me back my dress!
Listen to me, or Liam Neeson, you know, I've got a very special set of skills to find this dress, you know. And let's face it, though, the dresses are tailored, so it's not like they would fit anybody.
Right.
So,
you know what?
It does seem odd.
This is just a new low for crime in the area, I feel like.
Oh, come on. There's plenty lower than this.
It could be an experiment in doppelgangers. Maybe this person who stole all these dresses realizes that these certain people that these dresses are tailored for, they know where all these doppelgangers are. They're also getting married.
That's right.
That's what it's about, guys. I saw it's doppelgangers.
That would be like a crime criminal minds. Like here's somebody, a serial wedding gown stealer who just, they find people that fit the same body mold, steal the gowns, sell them at a half price, and just make a fortune.
I think
you've got a new movie plot right there.
It's good stuff. But actually, the idea of stealing it just to throw a monkey wrench in there could be actually kind of funny. In a horrible way. I'm not rooting for it, but anyway. So dozens of gowns stolen, which means if suddenly you see a bunch of gowns for sale on OfferUp or Craigslist Market, or you know, and you're wondering why are they offering such cheap prices, you know, you might think and see this is looking awful lot like the one of that my friend had at Brides and Beyond in Linwood, and contact law enforcement accordingly. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Sean, is this part of glass? What is this?
No, this is a band called Arvo Party and a song called Chevy Chase.
Seriously?
Yeah, it's definitely not Heart of Glass.
A little too upbeat for Chevy Chase these days.
Well, the song title is called Chevy Chase.
He's
very kind of a downer these days.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah, ever since Community, which was kind of a funny show I had, he's been a bit of a downer.
I've heard he can be kind of a... you know what, on set.
An unpleasant person,
yes,
in many ways.
A diva.
Mm-hmm. And I saw the remake of Vacation, unfortunately, and that, I could use some of the old Chevy Chase. It'd be nice to have him back.
Oh, yeah. The Caddyshack Chevy Chase with the whole, you know, in the golf scene when he's making those funny noises.
Yeah, he was great in his day. So this would have been a good thing for him back in the day, but not so much now. No, a little bit of a downer. All right, speaking of downers...
Thanks for taking us there, Dave.
Well, it gets worse. Speaking of downers, everybody, of course, knows AOC, the most famous congresswoman now, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. The congresswoman has sparked all kinds of attention, including from a little 8-year-old who calls herself Mini AOC. And she's become a bit of an online sensation, posting videos with her little glasses on. Her hair is very similar to AOC. And I have to say, she really does look like a miniature version.
She does. She looks the part. She puts on the red lipstick. She's adorable.
She's dead on. And she likes to do imitations of the congresswoman on YouTube.
Like, I'm Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a.k.a. AOC. And, like, I want to talk about, like, climate change. Because, like, there's no doubt cow farts are making the climate change. Like, in July, the climate was 96 degrees. And in February, the climate was 36 degrees. OMG. Like, that's a huge change in the climate in only 4 months. Like, at this rate, the world is going to end in exactly 12 years. And, like, I'm only 29 years old now. So the world will be over when I'm only 37 years old. Like, I also want to talk about socialism, because socialism is so amazing. Like, socialism is actually short for social media. Did you know that? Like, I use social media, so I'm a socialist. And, like, three of the most successful countries in the world are socialists, too. Venezuela, Facebook, and Twitter are all very successful socialist countries. I have a lot of friends who moved to America from Facebook.
All right, so you get the gist. She's a critic of AOC. And a pint-sized adorable one at that. And so, you know, if you're a big fan of AOC, you're probably going to be, you know, angry about the political message. But it's, I mean, I look at it more like a Saturday Night Live thing. She undeniably looks like AOC and does a halfway decent imitation. And I don't always say that about kids' imitations, because I know we're supposed to always say kids are cute. I've got my own kids. I think a lot of what they do is cute. Sometimes they're not cute. You know, sometimes kids do lousy things. But in this case, the kid was pretty dead on. Here's the bad part. Here's where it brings it down a bit. She's quitting. She's taking everything off the internet. All the videos are coming down. And why? They've been receiving so many death threats on social media. The family now feels like for her safety and for the safety of the family, they have to stop doing everything. You know, that is just insane. I mean, at this point, when a whole family feels threatened because of online death threats to an 8-year-old for political jokes, it means it's time that we need better law enforcement when it comes to online policing so that people are held responsible for that kind of nonsense. You know, some people, they might not mean it. They might just be trolling and thinking that it's okay somehow to make that kind of anonymous threat. It's not. You know, I've known, I've had it. You know, some significant threat myself, really one or two that I thought were genuine. And each time they were reported to law enforcement, I never heard anything again, of course. But, you know, these families that are, that you know, the kid's having a good time. She's, you know, the stepfather apparently didn't even know who AOC was until the kid started putting up her videos and looking like her. And, you know, the kid's kind of a news junkie. It's absurd that a family should live in fear because of this kind of thing. You know, again, I'll say it, but there's a phenomenon amongst adults in general where people, they claim that they're for free speech, but then when they hear speech they disagree with, it's like, well, I'm for all for free speech as long as it's not here. And we've had that in Seattle before. I remember a few years ago at the Pride Parade in Seattle, there was a couple of guys holding up a sign. You know, it was, I think, a repent sign, or maybe it was just a quote. It wasn't even what, it wasn't like the signs that are over there at the, outside the Safeco Field or the football stadium when the Seahawks are playing. It wasn't that kind of sign. It was more of a generic kind of sign, and people got mad and they started, you know, pulling the signs down and beating those guys. And, you know, I found it disturbing even then that people were saying, well, you know, what do you expect when you're offending people? And I thought, well, you know, it's free speech is free speech, even if you're telling it to people who don't like it and they disagree with it. But online, when it's an 8-year-old kid, you know, you've got to be the lowest of the low to threaten a little kid. Plus, there's a super easy solution to avoid it, which is don't click play on the video. You know, if you're mad, don't click play. It's that simple.